just a pleasure to be able to sit down, turn the TV on, and watch international indoor track and field athletics. Training and trying to get competition has been massively compromised for everybody. So to actually see the British team go out there and just deliver, it was fabulous to watch.
What we're trying to do and what we're definitely aiming to do this year is to provide that framework and that guidance, but make sure it's really easy to understand and follow.
I think in the back of my mind for all those years was, you know, I'm part of somebody's dream here, and you're just trying to do the right thing and create the right environment for the athletes to perform, and that's a huge motivator, yeah.
Hello and welcome to the England Athletics Podcast. This episode is about competition. You'll get a sense of the roadmap for the return to competition, and if the great achievements at the European Indoors are anything to go by, there should be lots to look forward to about the 2021 season. Another topic of discussion will be what makes an athletics competition great. I'm Alex Eftel, and joining me for this episode, first of all from England Athletics, Olympic race walker Martin Rush, our head of coaching and athlete development. Alongside him, Nicola Schedule, competition partnerships and innovation manager. And we're all delighted to have Cherry Alexander with us. Cherry is the vice president of European Athletics. She recently moved on from British Athletics after 29 years. Fulfilling a number of roles in that time. Notably, she was managing director of the London 2017 World Athletics Championships and World Para Athletics Championships. So, where better to start than by reflecting on the European Athletics Indoor Championships, in which Great Britain and Northern Ireland won 12 medals, the same as Glasgow 2 years ago. Cherry, you were privileged among us in terms of being there in Poland. What did you see?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the first thing, wasn't it just great to get some live athletics? I mean, I know that other things had gone on, but it was just such a buzz. You just felt it from the first 5 minutes of kickoff. Very difficult competition to get underway. We had to deliver a championship, you know, as safely as we possibly could. So the COVID planning meetings were very regular. And I think the good thing is, you know, all the feedback, even though there's been some positive since, they did a very good job in, you know, trying to minimise the risk. Because at the end of the day, it's a balance of risk putting these things on. But I think there were so many smiles in that stadium. Obviously, watching the British team is just a cherry on the cake. And so it was just fantastic all around, really.
It was, wasn't it? Martin, from a British perspective, there were some breakthroughs for some athletes who have come through England Athletics pathways and have won England championships at age group level. And great to see what then happens once you get on the senior stage.
It is absolutely great to see, and just a pleasure to be able to sit down, turn the TV on, and watch international indoor track and field athletics. And I'm really looking forward to this summer as well. And yeah, as you say, we had a lot of good young athletes, a few more senior athletes, taking their opportunity, just going out in a really complicated sort of, I mean, training and trying to get competition has been massively compromised for everybody. So to actually see the British team go out there and just deliver as well as we did in Glasgow, it was fabulous to watch.
I always know that something great has happened when my grandma, who doesn't really follow athletics, sent me an email and she said, I'm sure that you know, because I know that you're covering it, but a young British girl won a gold medal. And she was talking about Keely Hodgkinson. Yes, I do know, Grandma. I was commentating on that race.
Yeah.
Nicola, what did you enjoy about the competition?
Oh, again, for me, it was just being able to turn the TV on and see athletics. It's been missing, really, you know, from our household. My kids just thoroughly enjoyed it. They're more at an age now where they can see what's happening. And my son, who's 5, is quite quick and he likes to see what's happening. And I think he even felt a little bit inspired by what was happening because he wants to run faster. And he was like, well, what are they doing, Mummy? How are they doing it? And how do they do this and that? And, you know, so that was just really nice for him to be involved and sort of seeing the sport that I'm involved in and, you know, very passionate about. So that was really, really great. Really enjoyed it.
I saw that BBC Two coverage had 1.6 million peak audience, as well as stories like Keely Hodgkinson's gold medal in the 800 metres featured across British media outlets. So across radio, newspaper and television coverage. And that's really good to see from a sort of growing of the sports perspective.
I was just going to say, Alex, we've had some of the social media noise figures through. Hats off to the BBC, you know, they led the show in terms of the hours of coverage and the viewing figures, you know, and all the things we've learned through this COVID year, the passion for athletics is still very strong. But, you know, I don't know if you've seen, Alex, in your world, one of the innovations out there was doing the virtual, you know, the interviews more virtual and the booking system where you could book the athletes, you know, at the time appropriate following their race. But, you know, there are a number of things that we would take forward in terms of just helping with the future build of a meet. What that gave was another way of getting a wider reach out to the media with not necessarily having the bodies there. So that was a real positive.
What we found really interesting when watching it was we were able to see a lot more data and information than we've seen previously at athletics meets. So it was one of the longer distance events. I think we could see like their expected time for finishing and, yeah, and more split information. And for us in our household, my husband's just started running longer distances as well. He was really interested to see how far behind he was all these people. You know, it was really good. And I'd not seen that before. So it'd be interesting to find out more about that with European Athletics and who they used as well to help other competition providers.
As Nicola said there, that innovation, but innovation based on track and field as we've known it as well. So we didn't change, if you like, the events were the same, but there was some absolutely brilliant competition, some innovation around the way it's presented, and you get great, great media statistics. People really engage with it. People really want to watch athletics when it's presented in an interesting manner with good commentary. And of course, it's combined with really exciting athletics, both in terms of outright performances, but also in terms of some of the competition, if you like, the racing, the jump offs and the, you know, the men's high jump, stuff like that. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it was great. And yes, that was an innovation in terms of the expected pace. And it also featured the distance between athletes. So it's kind of a different way of presenting similar data, I suppose, just to analyse how far back someone is and how capable they might be of challenging. Was great to see. So many athletes had set personal bests in 2021, indoor bests. I think in the men's 1500 metres, 41 out of 51 athletes had run faster than ever before indoors in 2 and a bit months. It strikes me that there is huge appetite for competition. Do you think there's a chance that because we had a reduced year in 2020, that there could be an element of catch-up in terms of personal best, the development that was happening behind the scenes to some extent, but didn't actually showcase itself in terms of results on track? I'm just wondering whether that could be a thing at all.
Yeah, I think potentially. I think there's quite a few things at play here. Just the fact that, you know, athletes are really, they've missed competition and they want to come out and they want to compete. Maybe they're slightly more relaxed about things, you know, notwithstanding the public health issues. They're coming out and they're really wanting to test themselves again, see where they are and heading into obviously a really, really important year. Let's recognise that there's an awful lot of athletes out there as well that have not been able to train or compete so far. You know, I'm really, really focused on trying to get everybody back at their level to do competition.
That takes us on nicely into what we've captured in the last year and then hoping for a great 2021 season. A fair bit of uncertainty, and we know that. And this podcast being recorded off the back of the European Athletics Championships in March, and that's where we currently find ourselves. So we recently had the roadmap out of lockdown, plenty of changeable circumstances, yeah, along the way. But how are things shaping up in terms of planning for the outdoor season?
Well, I know there's a huge amount of work going on at like the governing body level, but actually out there as well in the people that last year managed to get track and field athletics back and organised all those competitions for us. They're busy, if you like, waiting for the licensing process to open very, very shortly. And then March the 29th, of course. So we are planning on allowing competition to come back from that date. The government roadmap has another slight easing on April the 12th, and then probably May the 17th is a key date for us all. Quite a few more restrictions seem to fall away. And then I'm really, really hanging out for June the 21st, which seems to be on the current roadmap anyway, the opportunity where we can really probably get back to what we would all consider to be the normal way of running the sport. But myself and Nicola and lots of other people are looking at what we can do as we slowly sort of progress back, what restrictions are going to be in place around social distancing, hygiene requirements. And we're very, very shortly, we'll put out draft guidance around how to run those competitions in the early part of the roadmap. And then obviously moving on to June 21st, where we hope all restrictions will be lifted, alongside a draft competition calendar. And that calendar actually looks reasonably, I'll say, solid as compared to, say, the normal calendar. So we are planning for England combined events in May. We're planning for the England under 20, under 23s in June. And I know league competitions, although the few have been cancelled at the front end of the season, they've a lot of leagues have managed to reschedule quite a few to the back end of the season or change the way that they're structuring their competition so that they're not gathering even like too many clubs or athletes together at one particular venue at the beginning, at the front end of the season. So yeah, it's exciting. We know people are searching for clarity and they want information up front. And we're doing our best to collate all that. We are waiting for a little bit more specific guidance to come out of government in the next couple of weeks, and we'll get that out to the community as quickly as we can.
What do you think are the challenges involved in putting on competition over the next few months? Because I think one of the issues is planning needs to happen, doesn't it, months in advance?
Yeah, absolutely. For those athletes heading towards even like national championships and qualifying performances for international events, and we know there's an awful lot of international events coming up. Yeah, they want to know that calendar. But, you know, I'm going to pull Nicola in here. She's done a huge amount of work on pulling together guidance and interpreting the government roadmap and information that we've had both this point and also last year, and trying to, if you like, supply that information to competition providers who have to put on these competitions. And it is complicated.
The government's put out guidance, and we've got to interpret that in a way that the sport can relate to. And, you know, last year we put out, for track and field alone, I think it was a 52-page document. Now, we appreciate, you know, we were all very much learning last year. And if I'm brutally honest, I think we all were a little bit fearful of COVID, and, you know, rightly so. What we're trying to do and what we're definitely aiming to do this year is to provide that framework and that guidance, but make sure it's really easy to understand and follow. And so Martin and myself have already, you know, we've done one webinar already about the return to competition. We're working on a draft document now, which is probably maybe about 20 pages long, maybe even less. So we've taken on board a lot of feedback that we had from last year, because we appreciate the majority of competition that happens is not at England level. You know, it's at the lower grassroots, more domestic level. It's leagues, it's county champs, it's local club competition. And so we need to make sure that guidance is for them to be able to interpret properly to whatever level of competition they're looking to host.
Two good points with Martin and Nicola there about the calendar planning. One who has sat at the fixtures table for 15 years, even that length of time, it doesn't get any easier. But what we are doing globally, obviously we've been working with World Athletics and the Global Calendar Unit, there was a recognition that the calendar needed simplifying, it needed a better message around it. But I think one of the really positive impacts for British Athletics and England Athletics and the home countries is trying to get a four-year plan around ring fencing the national championship weekend, because that helps, you know, it gives you a good starting place for the rest of the competitions that, you know, Nicola was just talking about. It will definitely make life easier, or little easier, on the rest of the fixture planning for the guys to work with, I think.
Absolutely. Thanks, Cherry. Yeah, and it's a really good point. Obviously, anybody looking at the competition calendar knows it's convoluted. So the earlier we can get the key dates in the diary, and then that enables us to look at all the other dates and sort of map them out and try and do that a year, at least a year ahead. So that people can actually say, okay, that's where I'm going. That's what I've got to organise, both from an athlete coach perspective, but also a competition provider perspective. And we know there's different pathways in all this. So some athletes are going to be focusing on national championships and others are going to be focusing on international championships. But there's also a huge, huge community, probably the majority, definitely the majority of athletes who are actually just looking to go out there and compete across the season, absolutely do a personal best, absolutely get great competition and enjoy their athletics, but maybe not get to a national championship. So we've got to make sure that the opportunities that are there for those athletes to represent the club in league competition and have a great personal journey, if you like, through athletics. So there's lots of different pathways that we as a sport need to make sure that the calendar works for. And this year, coming out of COVID, it is going to be, like last year, a bit of a compromise. We are juggling dates and we've all just got to do our best to make sure that there is appropriate competition for all the different athletes that we cater for.
What would your advice be to athletes who, for one reason or another, haven't been able to compete since the end of the summer in 2019?
It needs really, really careful planning and by coach and athlete and looking at themselves and where they are. So this is about physical preparation. It's about mental preparation. It's about competition preparation and actually looking at technical preparation, not forcing your way back into competition too quickly and at too high a level. You come back onto the track with your training, you build it back up nice and slowly. Don't force your way into higher level competition just because it's there, just because it's stuck on the calendar. Otherwise, you're going to end up getting injured. So yeah, it needs really careful managing and just being patient with training and focusing on the right competition at the right time.
So let's move on to discussing what makes a great competition. Cherry, I feel as though your experience here will come in handy. What makes an athletics competition great?
Oh, how long you got? It absolutely comes down to the three P's, what I call the three P's, and that's people, purpose, and as Martin just said, planning. First and foremost, whatever level of the pyramid that you're operating at, as we know with our sport, we have got, all sports probably, but we've got some of the most passionate people that you can come across. You know, that's what you're looking for. And because, you know, you've got to push the boundaries the higher up the pyramid you're going, and you have to have a high level of ambition. And with that, you know, it's tough. You have to take accountability. You have to take the responsibility. You have to take the pressure. When all that does come together, that's when you get world-class events. So I did have a 20-year plan. I know that sounds mad. But when I joined in 91, in British athletics anyway, I had a 20-year plan in my head to grow major events and, you know, get the mega events where we could. You know, and looking back, I think we did deliver over 20 global events. What makes it great for me, it was always about trying to make it work for the British athletes, whether that obviously a championship on home soil and the success that can be increased with that. And also, you know, the British championships was a televised level. So it did sort of orchestrate that pressure that the athletes need to learn. But with my showcase hat on, you know, I love a bit of creativity, Nicola, and showcasing. Some of the stuff that we just talked about recently, European athletics, is the dynamic new athletics, which we've done outdoors. Something like that could be really showcased well indoors. There was a bit of a dearth, really, with athletes and indoors, but I feel that's been resurrected more recently. So it's definitely one to think about. There's always ways and means of making things happen.
You need to have a proper aim. So what are you trying to achieve as an organisation? And then knowing who the people are that need to be around the table to make sure that that competition is right. Like Cherry says there, it's planning. So what is it you're trying to achieve? And then put a clear focus for each of those people around the table as to what their key roles and responsibilities are to make that competition happen. You don't need loads and loads of money. You just need to be able to communicate effectively. There's a lot of free tools online at the minute that can help you speak to your athletes, speak to your officials, speak to any volunteers that are in your local area to find out what it is that they think is great about your competition, what could be improved on, and what the athletes would like to see at your competition. And I think that's the main thing here.
Getting a personal best. So I go along to a competition as an athlete and I get a PB. Generally, I think that's a pretty good competition. So what's enabled me to get that personal best? Obviously, I've got to get in good shape before I arrive at that competition. But it's about making sure that the competitive environment is right. So I turn up and there's my peers are all there and I'm going to, you know, be pushed to get that competition. And then also being part of the community. So whether that's the club event and you feel as though you belong to something, whether you're representing England, whether you're representing Great Britain, Commonwealth Games coming up, which is that wider community piece as well as the team piece. That's all what makes great competition. And then if you like looking at, again, from an athlete and coach perspective, logistics around the event. So actually I arrive, clear signage to all the parking. I'm really sure when my warm-up is. I'm really sure how I get out onto the track, who's going to pick my kit up. I do the event. My results are online almost instantly. All that event management bit, give the athlete, the coach, the club team manager that sense that, you know what, this is really going somewhere and it enables people to deliver their best.
What Martin's talking about there, you know, another huge thing I'd say off the back of a high level event, the idea behind that as well is to financially, you know, is to get the finances to then invest back in the domestic level. If I look back over the televised events for many years, the investment, you know, went back into the national leagues at the time, the British Championships. And there was other events, you know, like the Jumps and Throws Festival. Even the money from those events would go into officials' education and training. So, you know, there's another method, another reason for doing all of this was to take that financial investment from the big events and take it down the sport, take it down the pyramid. It's not just about putting an event on television type thing.
Mm. Right. So in the last few minutes that we have, Cherry, you put on Twitter recently about 29 years at British Athletics. I mentioned some of the roles that you fulfilled at the start, but how you didn't know just where your journey would take you. You started as a PA to Andy Norman, the late athletics administrator. And in a few words, how enriched have you been by the people you've met and the journey that you've been on?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the whole journey, you know, back to 81, starting at the Great North Run, has been about the people. Now, I know that sounds cliche, I know that, but it absolutely has. I have come across some phenomenal people that I've worked with, who's motivated me, challenged me, hopefully helped me get the best out of myself, you know, and that's right across, you know, those 40 years at every turn. So, and you know, the athletes inspire you, you know, what drives you to go into London Stadium at the crack of dawn every morning up to 2017 championship, or going down to Manchester or Sheffield, the crack of dawn, to open the doors up for the athletes that were coming later. They absolutely inspire you. I think in the back of my mind for all those years was, you know, I'm a part of somebody's dream here. That's a very motivating thing. And you're just trying to do the right thing and create the right environment for the athletes to perform. And that's a huge motivator, yeah.
Nicola, in fact, said that you inspired her, Cherry. You are the first female vice president of European athletics, I think I'm right in saying. And your work with women in world athletics as well has been very much noticed over the last few years. How delighted are you to see that changing face of sports administration globally?
Oh, hugely changing, you know, from whence I started, I suppose. The interesting thing, you know, over many years, what I found was there'd be great conversations, you know, say about women's leadership, you know, well before Women in World Athletics was even born. But I never seen it sort of develop into becoming practical, you know, so there was more women on the board or there was more women in committees and commissions or whatever, you know, in leadership roles. But I never seen it materializing, if that makes sense. You know, it was always, this is the best thing to do, this is the right thing to do. But the outcome was never there. So part of, I guess, looking back on London 2017, you know, you obviously have to think of some legacy things around a major championships. And it struck me, I thought, well, so let's do something that can be practical for women on the way to, you know, London 2017. And it's great that it's still going now, you know, but the idea was to have a 5-year plan, which we did start. So, you know, we launched it in 2013. It started with a small group of women, even though, you know, there's challenges in the UK, because I sort of took this European first and then global, you know, had my eyes opened across a number, you know, other challenges that other women were facing. And immediately the camaraderie, you know, the bonding grew. Everyone had been facing, you know, similar circumstances. So that then created the networking opportunity off the back of that. Some of these women would then operate at London 2017 championships and also try and develop and find roles on their commissions back in their country. Fantastic support from European Athletics and also, you know, Seb Coe, personal support in helping us with that. But to me, it's about making things real, making it happen, and doing something practical that's really going to showcase and help, you know, women really take that forward themselves. Because at the end of the day, it has to be about how you talk to yourself internally to make things a success, I think.
Is that key then? I was going to ask your advice for people and women in general who would like to make it to the top of the sport.
It is, actually, if I'm honest. The one thing I will say, I've been very, very fortunate to be surrounded by great leaders, watching like this vision they have, this creativity, this pushing the boundaries, you know, always pushing the boundaries. And I've collectively taken that from a number of leaders that I've worked with. Andy Norman, you mentioned, was another one, you know, hugely took the sport from amateur to professional. You can take all the strengths of those people and try and make yourself learn from those people and then take the best bits you can see. But it does come down to talking to yourself, you know, that inward chimp. You have to face your fears in a lot of this stuff. The higher profile you go and the more responsibility you take on, you know, you have to self-motivate, you have to self-start yourself to deliver, you know, especially at pressure points along the way. But one of the pieces of advice, Alex, I was given very early on in my career was surround yourself with good people, but also never feel threatened by anyone. And I've never forgot that. They're on their career journey, you're on your career journey, you know, and if they get to shine, great. And then if you get to shine, happy days. Because at the end of the day, you're probably doing something very positive for the sport. So I think it's about being your own self-critic, listening to other people, and just trying to take the strengths.
So that's talking about change in terms of who's managing the sport. In terms of change generally, we've seen a lot of change in the last year. As was mentioned, you mentioned Dynamic New Athletics, a pilot by European Athletics. We've seen some changes in formats with the Diamond League, the long jump and the extra round of jumping. It is great to see experimenting. How do we get the balance right between healthy innovation and too much change?
Oh, you're asking somebody who's tried to make change over a long time. You know, athletics is a hugely traditional sport. Getting that balance is really difficult. I think people need to be more prepared for, you know, if you're trying to make change, not everything will work fantastic the first time. I can look back to when we delivered at Crystal Palace many years ago, you know, and a sellout crowd of 12,000 was seen as a success. And then, you know, you might have 25,000 in the London Stadium and you're trying to do creativity around that, production. But because you're not a full house, it's seen as a negative. And it's really, you know, I remember when we first brought music into the events, you know, the letters that went into Athletics Weekly, this is not right for the sport. I mean, now, you know, we've got live bands in London and it's all coordinated into the athletics and the athletes love it. Predominantly, the athletes love it. But it's really hard to make change. It hasn't stopped us trying to do it, that's for sure. But you should never lose the integrity of the competition. Absolutely. You know, those athletes are living their dream, working, you know, to get where they want to get to. And you need to respect that. But I've been through a number of generations of athletes. They want entertainment. It's a different world we're living in, you know, obviously with the social media. And we need to adapt. And this shorter format, you know, it's been really difficult to try and deliver shorter format. As you said earlier about the Diamond League changes, the throw-in events and making all that still work. So if you're taking away an opportunity, say, in the Diamond League, you must be prepared to offer an alternative for the athletes who do, you know, doing those events. You know, we are across all the disciplines. And that's, I think people have learned that very fast. You must look at what alternatives you can provide if you're removing something. And you know what? It could turn out to be even better. I'm a great believer in event specific, the entertainment and the energy that you can put around that event specific is really positive.
Well, thanks so much for your thoughts. We could have spent the whole podcast really talking about your reflections on your time in the sport. There's more that you want to achieve as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, all that time of British Athletics, there's a little bit of you think, oh, right, is that time up? But then when you hit the global scene, all your experience and learnings, you think, do you know what? I can help you with that or input into that. You know, the global calendar unit, all the years of doing the fixture planning has been a big one for me. And also you learn how, you know, we need to try and simplify the sport, showcase it better. You have to take the learnings that you've had over that time and try and help just in another sphere, really. I mean, you know, I'm a huge fan of British Athletics, always will be. But right now I'm doing other projects. Those projects are going to impact the sport at some elements of the pyramid. And that still motivates me.
Do you have one particular proudest moment that stands out?
I took an opportunity. I think there was 2 days left of the World Championships in London. BBC were presenting something to Brendan Foster. So I was up there helping out with it. And I looked across the stadium and the stadium was absolutely rammed. And I did quietly think to myself, you know, these last 2 years have paid off just watching that. So that was quite a proud moment. A part of that was both my, I had twin boys along this journey and they were both there that night. It was quite emotional, you know, what they came up and said to me afterwards. And I thought, God, yeah, I managed to raise 2 kids, keep the husband happy and deliver world championships. And that was pretty special, actually. Yeah.
That's a brilliant way of summing it up. And I visualised what the stadium looked like as you looked out over it there.
Thank you so much
for joining us. From everyone at England Athletics, a huge congratulations for everything that you have achieved and continue to achieve. Cherry Alexander, thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Wonderful to have Cherry Alexander with us on the podcast. Thanks to her, Nicola Schedule, and Martin Rush for joining, and to you for listening. Any thoughts or questions, get in touch via social media or via the website englandathletics.org, where guidance is regularly updated. That's all for this episode though, so whether you tuned in on your run, car journey, or while relaxing at home, thanks for doing so, and goodbye.